With great new shows, podcasts, concerts on demand, and internet music channels, there are so many ways to enjoy the new CBC Radio 2. Go to cbc.ca/radio2 for a music mix you won't hear anywhere else. CBC Radio 2. Everywhere music takes you.
From the King's Playhouse in Georgetown, Prince Edward Island, it's the Vinyl Cafe with Stuart McLean.
Thank you very much. How nice to be back on Prince Edward Island, and how good to be here in Georgetown. It may have escaped your attention, but of course that's what I'm for. I'm on constant patrol for things that may have escaped your attention. My bright eyes wide open as I paw around the margins of this world, noting down the marginalia so that I can bring to your attention the things that may have escaped it. And I'm thinking here on Prince Edward Island, of all places where there is more farmland and more farmers per capita than anywhere else in the nation, here on Prince Edward Island, the agricultural cradle of the country, where the number one crop is the humble potato, that it may have escaped your attention that the General Assembly of the United Nations of the World has declared this the year of our Lord 2008, the International Year of the Potato. Thank you. Now, you may wonder why they do that. Well, they did it because they want to raise the profile of this humble little tuber. And I stand before you today, humbly, in this old clapboard theater, the oldest theater, I'm told, in the country. Some might add, curiously, though I would say appropriately, somewhat barn-like in nature. I stand here, your humble servant, and theirs too, ready to serve the United Nations of this world whenever they summon me, clay in their hands, and in the service of humanity, ladies and gentlemen of Georgetown, Prince Edward Island, my ode to the potato. That humble little tuber who looks like a hippopotamus or something rather ruder if you leave it in a bag, that is, instead of in the pot. And it goes all soft and wrinkly and smells like stuff I'd rather not talk about while standing on the stage. For the purpose of this little ode is really to engage your imagination and your taste buds. I am not here to nag. I've come to praise potatoes. I'm not here to make you gag. You can mash them, bash them, put them in a pot. You can freeze them or fry them. You can eat them cold or hot. They're not mentioned in the Bible, yes. And that makes some folks wary. And they're high in glycoalkaloids, and that can make them scary, causing headaches, cramps, comas, and in rare cases, death. But there's something else they cause I should mention in this breath. Sheer delight. If you slice them long and thin and fry them up in oil, oh, let the sin begin. I'm talking of the French fry. Sprinkle liberally with salt. I would die for French fries. Is there anyone who'd not? The humble pomme de terre, the apple of my eye, drenched in dill and butter or a sour, creamy sigh, a generous bowl of gnocchi, a steaming bowl of soup, a loaf of bread, potato head, a most congenial root. I knew a woman once who grew one in the shape of a duck. She was living with a certain man at the time who planted her potatoes for her that spring. But she had a new man living with her in the fall when it was time to dig them up. As she watched him working the garden through the kitchen window, the clothes snapping on her clothesline in the wind, she thought to herself, love can come and go, but a potato is forever. Oh, yes, they endure. Endure, indeed they do. On the plates of kings the potato sings, a creamy song of cheese, a saucy song of succulents, a crispy tune of cheer, of butter lakes, potato cakes, pepper grinders, parsley flakes. Or in a pot, a peasant stew, a fire of flickering meals, the darkening night, potato blight, an Irish sigh, a teary eye. One potato, two potato, three potato, four, five potato, six potato, seven potato more, and out you must go as fast as your flipper flapper floppers can carry you. Potato feast, potato famine, boiled alone, scalloped with salmon, my bud, my spud, my sweet potato pie. My Yukon gold, I'm growing old. Stay with me till I die. Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, I'd like to introduce you to our first musical guest today. From Summerside, Prince Edward Island, this is Tanya Davis with her song, you guessed it, Potatoes.
On Prince Edward Island, the dirt is as red as they say. And the hills are rolling, and so are the waves. And there are patchwork fields all over the place. And miles of sand on which to lay. Tourists leave this in the fall, come back to it in May. What takes place on a tiny province in the snow? And what do the locals do when the tourists go? We dig those fields you admired as by them you drove. Our tiny island with its red dirt roads. And all that iron helps our potatoes to grow. Then the cold comes in and the harvest is over. And we seal our windows up, stack wood for our fires. And we take off our screen doors and our summer tires. And we settle in for the winter, get nice and tired. Hibernate while the snow blankets our island. When it storms hard enough, we all stay in our houses. And we get some days off work and some power outages. And we have to slow down candles and couches until the snow stops falling. We all go shovel ourselves out of it. We make it through tough winters here. We are proud of this. You have to stay in a place through all the seasons to appreciate everything that it is. Spring is a long time coming in the Gulf of the St. Lawrence. And the trees are a long time budding, and when they do it is so glorious. And the birds, they keep us patient as we're waiting, singing us nice choruses. Soon enough, we're all gathered up talking of how warm it is. We love our island, that's for sure it is. Thank you.
That was Tanya Davis, and that was her song, Potatoes, and that's off Tanya Davis's wonderful album, Make a List. I'm sure you enjoyed the song, but if I know you the way I think I know you, I know not all of you were giving Tanya your full attention. Because if you're like me, and I know you are, otherwise why would you be here? If you're like me, you've been sitting there thinking, no one told me it's the International Year of the Potato. Here we are, the year's almost over. How the heck are we going to celebrate? So I was feeling the same thing myself when I heard the news, and I'm nothing if I'm not the full-service radio host. I'm here to tell you I got that covered for you. Here's what I've done. I've adopted the potato as the official vegetable of the Vinyl Cafe. But we're going to go one better than the United Nations, because we aren't just going to adopt it for a measly year. What kind of adoption is that? We're going the whole hog. We're going to adopt it in perpetuity. And in celebration of this, dare I say, momentous moment, we have partnered with one of the country's leading chefs. We've asked him to design an official potato recipe for the Vinyl Cafe to seal the deal, and he's here today to run us through it. Ladies and gentlemen, would you please welcome a man who lives a quiet and unassuming life down the road in Fortune, Prince Edward Island, but is known on television sets in over 65 countries around the world as the chef at home, Michael Smith.
Hi, Stuart.
Hey. Michael has just walked out on stage with two pots and a hot plate.
We've got one pot full of butter, of course, and another pot full of potatoes. And, Stuart, I have to say that here on Prince Edward Island, we take our potatoes very seriously.
And that's why you're here. And you've designed the official recipe to go along.
Yes, and
so what do you got?
This is something that I've spent a lot of time thinking about. I haven't been sleeping lately.
Uh-huh.
I mean, to come up with a recipe that meets that criteria, that satisfies the discerning palate of the Vinyl Cafe, that meets the expectations of Prince Edward Islanders, well, the best I could come up with was mashed potatoes. Not just any mashed potatoes.
Okay, I was going to say that's something I could have probably come up with by myself.
Yes, but I'm here to hold your hand. What we have here, this is brown butter mashed potatoes. Now,
Brown butter. Okay, so you get the potatoes, you get the brown butter.
We've got the potatoes,
here.
We've got the butter.
On a hot plate.
That's right, but not just any butter. This butter.
No, you got enough butter to deep fry a squirrel there.
This is the idea. Or a potato, anyway. You know, and butter, of course, is full of water. So what I'm doing right now is cooking off that water. You can see the steam. Yeah. And when all that water disappears, the butter fat that stays behind, and it is about the butter fat.
It's always about the butter fat, Michael.
What's going to happen is that butter fat is going to start to brown the milk fat solids. Okay, let's immediately forget that, because you don't need to know that to know how to make great mashed potatoes. Yeah. What's going to happen is it's going to start to brown.
Okay.
When it's brown, it's perfect. Think of a steak. Would you take a steak and dip it into boiling water until it was medium rare?
No.
Not a chance.
No.
Same thing with the butter. When it's brown, it's got flavor. It's like making toast, taking it from white to brown. Brown is flavor.
I always thought it was burnt.
No, not here on Prince Edward Island.
Good.
Can you tell I take my butter very seriously?
Yeah. So you're shaking it every once in a while.
Because I just can't keep my hands off the butter. I mean, I feel like I have to do something.
No, you don't have to do anything. We can just watch it.
You can see it's starting to change. It's starting
to
foam a bit.
It is. It's getting frothier and foamier.
It's frothing, and you can see the steam has died down quite a bit. The water's gone. It's evaporated. So now the heat is really going to come here. This is going to start to heat up. Now we're going to get some flavor. And as soon as that turns nice and brown...
Stop touching it.
Okay. Oh, you want to touch it,
No,
don't
you? But it's changing colors now.
Look, it is. It's starting. All that brown bits, that's all flavor. And you can do this at home. Anybody who makes mashed potatoes, just take your butter, put it in a separate pot, and melt it, and watch it, and talk about it like we are. And yeah. Butter likes to be the center of attention, too, not just potatoes. And when it starts to brown and turn that beautiful golden brown color of a perfect turkey...
Yeah, okay, it looks... Yeah,
Just like now?
Yeah.
Take it a step further.
Yeah.
There it is. And when it looks
like
toffee. That beautiful caramel toffee look, just like that, then you add your potatoes.
And you're going to pour the potatoes right into the pot with the butter?
That's right. Because you get more sizzle that way. Yeah. Look at that.
And is it okay to eat this much butter?
Oh, yeah. Oh, when you brown the butter, you remove the fat. It makes it much healthier.
Well, that's a relief.
Now, look, there is a secret ingredient.
Okay.
This is nutmeg.
Nutmeg
is the key to a great mashed potato and lots of butter. So I'm going to put a little nutmeg in here. Just grate it right in.
You're using the Lee Valley rasp like all the big-time chefs?
That's right. Yeah. This is something I picked up way back when I was doing my French apprenticeship, learning from all these fancy French chefs, dodging plates, dodging fish, you know, all the things that French chefs throw at you. One thing that stuck was the nutmeg. And just a little touch of nutmeg in the official Vinyl Cafe potato recipe, I think that's going to just send it right over the top.
Okay. Can I try?
Okay.
There's two spoons here.
Here we go.
Okay. Okay, these are hot, these babies. Smells like popcorn. Whoa.
Not bad, eh?
You know what? You put salt in there, too.
There was a little bit of salt in the cooking water.
And you weren't telling people that. You see, that's what you chefs always do, you.
There's got to be.
See, I'm onto them. That's pretty good, though.
Not bad, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, that's very good. Okay, so we'll post this on the...
We'll put it on the website. We'll write the recipe out.
I'll put it on my website. You put it on yours?
Sure.
Okay, I'm at vinylcafe.com. You're at...
ChefMichaelSmith.ca.
Okay, and if anybody wants the recipe, the butter, the potatoes, the whatever.
The nutmeg.
The
nutmeg, all there.
The
squirrel.
No, the squirrel is
optional.
And if anybody else wants to try them, you're out of luck because we only got two spoons here.
Thank you.
Michael Smith, ladies and gentlemen. And Michael's recipe for brown butter mashed potatoes is available on the Vinyl Cafe web page. If you want to find it, you can just go to vinylcafe.com or check Michael's web page, chefmichaelsmith.ca. I'm Stuart McLean, and this is the Vinyl Cafe, coming to you today from Georgetown, Prince Edward Island, and this is the first time I've ever done a show with a spoonful of mashed potatoes in my hand. We're going to get Tanya Davis out to do another song, and this is off Tanya's brand new album. The album's called Gorgeous Morning, and I heard this song for the first time a week ago, and I haven't been able to get it out of my head. I love this song. Hope you like it too. Tanya's a poet, and you can hear her poet's love of words in all her songs. And there's something very fetching about the chorus of this one. It's about art, and maybe it's all the internal rhymes, I'm not sure, but it sure has hooked me. Art, art, I want you. Art, you make it pretty hard not to. My heart is trying hard here to follow you, but I can't always tell if I ought to. This is Tanya Davis.
Hi again. Hi. I brought a few friends. I wondered what would be the worth of my words in the world. If I write them and then recite them, are they worth being heard? Just because I like them, does that mean that I should mic them and see what might unfurl? And I think of the significance of my opinions here. Is it significant to be giving them? Does anybody care? Just because I'm into this, does that mean that I should live like it? And really, do I dare? Art, art, I want you. Art, you make it pretty hard not to. My heart is trying hard here to follow you, but I can't always tell if I ought to. So I pondered the point of my art in this life. If I make it, will someone take it and think that it's genuine? Would they be glad that I did, cause they got something good out of it? Would they leave me and be any more inspired? And I question the outcome of the outpouring of myself. If I tell everyone my stories, would this keep me healthy and well? Would it give me purpose and to the world some sort of service? Is it worth it? How could I tell? Art, you make it pretty hard not to. My heart is trying hard here to follow you, but I can't always tell if I ought to. Art, art, I want you. Art, you make it pretty hard not to. And my heart is trying hard here to follow you, but I can't always tell if I ought to.
Thank you.
That was Tanya Davis. That was her song called Art, and that's off Tanya Davis's brand new album, Gorgeous Morning. Time now to introduce our next musical guest. She is also a native islander. For a province of less than 150,000 people, there are an impressive number of talented young musicians coming from Prince Edward Island these days. Disproportionate number of them seem to be women. Rose Cousins, Catherine McClellan, Tanya Davis are a few stellar examples. And so is our next guest, Jen Grant. And in case you're wondering, yes, her mother is Heather McDonald Grant, the former chicken-plucking champion of Prince Edward Island. This is Jen Grant with her song, A Morning Break.
Say farewell to all the friends you made. Well, I can't see you coming back this way. You say hello like it's all you know, and it's just in a working man's way you lay. You say hello like it's all you know, and it's just in a working man's day. Your boat lies on the water, and the crystal blue reminds me of you. Like a tear stuck in a stain, the thought of you remains. Senor, goddaughter, ooh, oh. Senor. But time, bring it back to me. The morning breaks, but time, bring it back to me. Oh, oh, and time it takes, but time, bring it back to me. Oh, oh, and time it takes, but time, bring it back to me.
very much.
It was Jen Grant. It was the dog days of summer, and half the city was away. Even the mailman was on vacation. Neighborhood was so quiet you could hear the spiders working. There was absolutely nothing to do. Murphy and Sam were lying on their back, shoulder to shoulder, underneath Jim Schofield's mulberry tree. There was an ant crawling across Sam's forehead. Both boys had their mouths stretched wide open. Sam said, "This is crazy. It's been like an hour." Murphy said, "It's been 10 minutes. Do you give up?" Sam said, "Do you?" They had a bet. First one to catch a mulberry in his mouth won. A hot wind rustled the branches of the tree above them. The boys, sun-dappled, watched the leaves turn from green to gray to green again. The clouds were doing summer things, but the berries weren't. Nothing was coming down. It was the middle of the week, in the middle of the summer, and all there was the sun, the soft, hot wind, and one lovelorn cicada vibrating at the top of the mulberry tree. Murphy said, "It sounds like in To Kill a Mockingbird." Sam said, "Once again, I have no idea what you're talking about." Murphy said, "The cicadas. Do you give up?" Sam sat up abruptly. Sam said, "Okay, whatever." Murphy said, "I win." It was the next day. It was lunch. They were eating at Sam's house, grilled cheese, carrot sticks, chocolate milk. Morley was leaving for work, but she wasn't leaving yet. She was standing in the middle of the kitchen with her hands on her hip. She was considering something. "No," she finally said. "No videos. It's summer. It's a beautiful day. Play outside." Sam said, "We're bored of outside." Morley said, "That's funny. I thought you were bored of school." "Adam Turlington's going to summer school. I bet summer school isn't boring." Arthur the dog was lying in the cool dust under the back steps. Sam was holding a cup dripping water on him through the slats. Murphy said, "We should get the hose." And that, more or less, is the moment it all began. They called Peter Moore. They said, "Bring your bathing suit and a sprinkler." By the middle of the afternoon, there were 5 boys running around the backyard. 5 boys with 2 sprinklers, one attached to the garden tap and one running out the back door attached to the basement sink. Middle of the afternoon is when Rashida Chuddery came by with little Fatima in tow. Rashida was on her way to the store. She'd stopped by with something for Morley. When no one answered the front door, she came around the back. Fatima got sprayed. And she squealed, but it was a squeal of delight, which only turned to tears when Rashida said they had to go. And one thing led to another, and Fatima ended up staying. "We'll take care of Fatima," said Sam. And they did, magnificently. They unscrewed one of the sprinklers, and they replaced it with a nozzle. They set the nozzle to jet spray. They put Fatima on a chair on the back of the deck. They gave her the jet hose. Fatima blasted them with a hose as they ran around the yard. It was, beyond a doubt, the most wonderful fun Fatima had in her entire life. Better than anything, ever. Better than Eid al-Fitr. When Rashida came to get her after about an hour, Fatima wouldn't leave. Sam said, "She can stay. We'll bring her home." When they did bring her home, Rashida gave them $10. "Sweet," said Murphy. It was Murphy's idea to pick her up the next afternoon. They spent the morning getting ready. They got Peter Moore to bring his wading pool over. They dragged Sam's old sandbox from a forgotten corner of the yard. They set it in the sun so the sand would dry out. They made lemonade. The three of them went and knocked on the Chuddery door, standing on the stoop like three little Jehovah Witnesses. When Rashida answered, it was Murphy who did the talking. "But we were wondering," said Murphy, "if Fatima would like to come to our water park." On their first day, they got Fatima and Eric Schmidt's little brother, and they made $20. They had everything back in place and the basement all mopped up by the time Dave and Morley got home. Murphy went to his cottage over the weekend, which didn't really matter because it rained on Saturday. They were back at it on Monday. Murphy, who had 2 days to think about things, arrived with 3 white T-shirts and 2 days of pent-up plans. They set up the backyard, the sandbox, the wading pool, and the sprinklers, and then Murphy produced the white T-shirts. "We should look professional," said Murphy. So they put on the white T-shirts and they headed off. They were looking for customers. That afternoon, there were 7 kids in the backyard, and 4 of them were paying customers. It's not clear who thought up the water slide. It might have been Fatima. Something about being the first kid there, the founding member of whatever this was, had given the normally shy 4-year-old a massive injection of self-assurance. Could have been Fatima's idea, but no one remembers anymore. Old Eugene, who lives next door, was involved. Wouldn't have happened without 92-year-old Eugene. Eugene had been watching since it began, sitting where he always sits on hot summer afternoons, on the old kitchen chair under the grape arbor, smoking one of his Italian cigars, nursing a tumbler of his homemade Chianti, and tilted dangerously backwards, his feet feathering the fence whenever he started to teeter. Sitting there, nursing his wine, and wondering what in God's name those children were trying to do. They had 2 slides that they had removed from 2 playsets, and they were trying to duct tape them together, or trying to make them into 1 long slide. "Sam," called Eugene in his throaty whisper, waving his spotted arm in the air. If it was a slide they needed, he had a better one. It was in his shed. He was pretty sure. "Sam," he called again, coughing and spitting on the ground, gesturing at the shed at the bottom of the garden. The boys came over, and he led them around his wife Maria's flower bed, past his famous fig tree, under the grape arbor, between the rows of peppers and tomatoes, and into the earthy cool of his shaded shed. When his watery eyes adjusted to the light, he started them moving stuff around. An old refrigerator, a bureau, 2 hand-push lawnmowers. It was dirty work. And they were getting hot and irritated because they didn't understand what he was up to until they unearthed it. Until Eugene stepped back and beamed and they stood there in the sticky darkness without saying a word. Struck dumb, staring into the back corner of Eugene's shed as if they had just uncovered the gold mask of Tutankhamun. The greatest treasure they could imagine. A huge, long plastic tube, a portable industrial garbage chute. The thing you use... the sort of thing you use when you're renovating houses to slide debris from the 2nd floor to the yard. That's where the chute came from. They'd been trying to build a water slide that ran from the back deck down to the garden. A little slide, a modest drop. But by the time they had finished, by the time they had heaved the enormous plastic tube out of Eugene's shed and dropped it over the fence, they had heaved modesty out the window. This water slide didn't start on the deck. This water slide was the water slide to end all water slides. This water slide began at the 2nd floor bathroom window. It traversed the family room roof, looped around the clothesline pole, rolled over the picnic table, and ended in the back garden near the pear tree. Fatima stood on the deck with her little arms folded over her chest as the boys ran the handheld shower hose out the bathroom window to wet the slide down. It took most of the afternoon to assemble it. The hardest part was connecting the slides from the play sets to Eugene's chute. But they finally figured it out. And when they did, they all agreed it just might be the greatest water slide ever built, ever. Any normal adult watching all this unfold would have been seized by a spasm of anxiety. They would have put a stop to it. But Eugene was the only adult watching. And at 92, Eugene was a lot closer to boys and the boyhood call to adventure than he was to the anxiety levels of any normal adult. After two wars and 91 and a half summers, what could possibly go wrong in a backyard? Fatima was the first one down. She bounced to her feet at the bottom like a trapeze artist. It was the greatest water slide in the world. Word spread overnight. No one actually told anyone. It spread through the telepathy of childhood. By the next day, there wasn't a boy or girl in the neighborhood who didn't know about the water slide in Dave and Morley's backyard. No adults knew about it. Boys dissembled it at the end of the afternoon, and they spent the next morning putting it back together. They didn't believe they were doing anything wrong. They just had this intuitive understanding shared by all children that there are perfectly innocent things children do that adults are not equipped to handle. And so they put it up and they took it down and then they put it up again. Word spread, but not amongst the adults. Because every kid in the neighborhood had the same intuitive understanding. No one was surprised then, the very next afternoon, when about 25 kids showed up. Or that everyone knew, without anyone saying anything, to wheel their bikes down the drive and lean them behind the house, so they didn't attract attention from the street. What did surprise them, however, was the moment that afternoon, that second afternoon, when Eugene, who had been watching them quietly from his chair under the arbor for two straight days, stood up and went inside and came out 15 minutes later wearing nothing but a bathing cap and a Speedo. He grinned at them, and then he propped his pruning ladder against the fence and climbed over, the veins on his naughty old legs throbbing with excitement. It was Chris Turlington who videoed all this on his cell phone. It was his twin sister, Christina, who took the phone home, downloaded the video, and posted it on YouTube. Dave never would have seen it if he didn't work at a record store and his staff wasn't attuned to this sort of stuff. But he did. You might have seen it yourself if you have kids. A lot of people saw it that afternoon, tens of thousands, actually. It was the most watched video about an hour after it was posted. Everyone was talking about it, though you understand when I say everyone, I mean everyone of a certain age. People like Brian, for instance, who works part-time for Dave. Oh, said Brian, who was sitting at the computer that afternoon, you have to see this. And Dave walked over and leaned over his shoulder, and Brian pressed play, and this is what Dave saw. A grainy and very shaky close-up of an impossibly old man struggling over a fence. Then there was a cut, and there was a jerky shot of the back of a house, and the camera pulled back, and Dave saw there were kids dancing on the back roof of this house. And then the camera zoomed in, and he saw something that looked like a bobsled run coming out of the upstairs window. There was something familiar about it all. I think I've seen this before, said Dave. Feels like deja vu. And then the camera zoomed in on one of the kids dancing on the roof. The kid had one of those tiny Italian cigars in his mouth. I think I know this place, said Dave. Is this a frat house? It looks like a frat house. Dave leaned forward, squinting at the screen. The picture was so fuzzy, it was hard to be sure. Then the camera zoomed in on the window. A small face and two hands appeared. Whoever it was holding a bottle in each hand and dumping the contents of the bottle down the slide. I think that's detergent, said Brian. Oh, my God, said Dave. You ain't seen nothing, said Brian. It gets wicked better. There was another edit, and the camera zoomed in on the old guy again. It was hard to make him out because the kids were gathered around him, slapping him on the back. The old guy was doing something to his mouth. Oh, my God, said Dave. It was Eugene, of course. And Eugene was doing what he always does before he does anything that requires exertion. He was reaching into his mouth and removing his false teeth. As Dave watched, the old man handed his teeth to a little girl standing on a chair. She was holding onto a garden hose. The little girl held the teeth high in the air, and all the kids applauded. Now she was stuffing them into her pocket. And she turned her hose onto the slide. And the camera left her to follow the old man inside the house and up the stairs and into the bathroom. Dave said, "Is this live?" The camera zoomed in on the bathroom window, and everything was still. A beat, another. Dave shrugged, and that's when the toothless old man came flying out the window. He was wearing nose plugs. He was sitting down, waving at the camera with one hand and holding a glass of wine with the other. Then he hit the frothy spot where the boy had poured the detergent. Oh, my God, it looked exactly like Eugene from next door. I have to go, said Dave. It gets better, said Brian. The whole point is the end when he hits the garden fence. But Dave didn't hear that. Dave was already out the store. So he missed the moment when Eugene flew out the bottom of the slide like he had been shot out of a cannon. And he missed the part where he smacked into the garden fence. The part where he struggled to his feet and stood there, toothless, covered with bubbles, his nose plug still on, grinning madly, until he looked over the fence and spotted his wife, Maria. And Eugene turned and looked at the camera, and his shoulders sagged, and he said one word. Busted. Dave missed that part. Dave was already out the front door, running like a shot, turn right, past Dorothy's bookstore, past Kenny Wong's cafe. Don't stop, there's no time to stop. It was 4:30. The hottest part of the day was done. Sam and Murphy were on the back porch, sitting on the double hammock. Well, more slouched than sitting, or sprawled on the hammock. They were moving back and forth, but barely moving. the perfect picture of summer indolence, as still as hot wind on a summer lake. Dave burst into the scene like a dog with a fetched ball. Dave, all sweaty and panting and out of breath, dog-like Dave. Murphy and Sam looked up at him from the hammock with sleepy boredom. "Hey, Dad," said Sam. "Boys," said Dave. "Hey," said Sam. This was not what he had expected at all. This was the last thing he had expected. He looked over the fence. Eugene was sitting where he always sat, under the grape arbor, tilting back on his kitchen chair, his arm in a sling. Dave looked at Eugene, and then he looked at the boys, and then he walked over to the fence and nodded. Eugene nodded back and spat on the ground. Dave smiled at Eugene. Dave said, "You okay?" "Ah," said Eugene, motioning with his head. "Gardening accident." Dave said, "Sorry to hear that." Maria, who was sitting beside her husband, snorted. Dave nodded and walked back to the boys in the hammock. "What have you boys been up to?" "We watered the garden," said Sam. "Front and back," said Dave. He was looking around. The grass was certainly wet. The bathroom window was closed. There were no children dancing on the roof. "Just the back," said Sam. "Looks like you did a good job," said Dave. Everything was in order, except for a few telltale soap bubbles clinging to the pear tree. Dave said, "You've probably done enough watering for the next little while." "Yeah," said Sam, "probably." Dave looked at his son hard. Sam looked back, nodding his head. Sam said, "We're pretty much through with the watering." Okay, thought Dave, my move. He knew it, and they knew it too. The boys were getting up. Sam said, "We're going to the park." Line of least resistance, thought Dave. Lead me on. "That's a pretty good idea," said Dave. And he dug into his pocket and pulled out a bill. "Why don't you boys stop at Lawler's and get yourself an ice cream on the way? It's a good day for ice cream." Sam pocketed the bill. "Thanks," he said. Murphy nodded at Dave as he passed him. "Thanks," said Murphy. Thank you very much. Thank you. Well, that's all the time we have for today's show. I want to thank all our special guests, Chef Michael Smith, Tanya Davis, Jim Brand, and Sean McGilvery, who is playing bass. Thanks also this week to Rod Snedden and Phil Bullpit for the technical assistance. David Amer is the founding producer of the Vinyl Cafe. Louise Curtis is the production assistant. Julie Penner is the music producer. Meg Masters is the long-suffering story editor. The Vinyl Cafe is produced by Jess Milton. I'm Stuart McLean, and we're going to get Jen Grant to sing us out here. So long for now.
This is a song I wrote for my dog, Stanley Grant, and we used to go swimming in the Bothwell Beach. Oh, tree, you're taller than me and greener on the other side. Oh, clouds, are you looking at me now? Are you looking down at us on our side? Sending out. Please take care of the heart you're taking there.
Nobody's got your heart on their sleeve like we do. And you were getting old, the sun was setting down in our time. Seems like I was leaving you those final weeks when I moved out with photographs and dishes and sheets and that. Well, I said it's time for moving on. My heart was not so strong. I took you walking where I memorized your steps and colors, but they last me for a lifetime. You're never leaving my mind. You're never leaving my mind. There are places in the land where we let go of you. Call the ocean and the summer's ground the best places you've been to. Well, I made you a heart of sticks and set up your favorite view. Seagulls over island sands and herons on the dunes. You're running in my heart, aren't you? Running in my heart, aren't you?
Hello, you've been listening to a brand new Vinyl Cafe concert. Stuart McLean and the Vinyl Cafe will be hitting the road again at the end of September. They'll be doing live Vinyl Cafe concerts all over British Columbia, Ontario, Quebec, and the United States, making stops in places like Kelowna, Nanaimo, Duncan, Cranbrook, Trail, Vernon, Prince George, Terrace, Kamloops, Abbotsford, Kingston, Montreal, Huntsville, North Bay, Sudbury, Chatham, Indianapolis, Indiana, Cleveland, Ohio, Mount Clemens, Michigan, and Seattle, Washington. In December, Stuart McLean will be taking his annual Christmas concert to British Columbia, Alberta, Saskatchewan, Ontario, and the United States. You can check the Vinyl Cafe website to see if they're coming to your town. You can find the Vinyl Cafe on the web at vinylcafe.com.
For more on all of our CBC podcasts, head to cbc.ca/podcasting.